The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Are you a clinic owner searching for something new this year? Do you have unhappy clients with a mystery illness the doctors can't treat? Then it's time to try out our latest professional systems. My name is Kevin Davis. With our bioresonance system, we start with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments to strengthen, meridian stimulation, pathogen discovery, session guides, lifetime support, and a lot more. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today.
Welcome to the Herbal Medicine Show, brought to you by Heartwood Herbal Education. In today's show, I visit the National Institute of Medical Herbalists yearly conference and try to get behind the scenes of the herbal profession. I talk to Dee Atkinson, well-known herbalist and medicine maker, and the president, Laura Stannard, and to Anita Ralph, herbal medicine educator. This week's herb is passion flower, and back in the garden, my guest is Paul Hambly, chairman of the Education Fund. Welcome to the Herbal Medicine Show on UK Health Radio. So I'm at the Institute of Medical Herbalists conference in Chester, and I'm sitting in a lovely cozy corner with my old friend and colleague, Dee Atkinson. And I'm very pleased to have met up with you again, Dee, because I know you have a fascinating journey that you've been on in herbal medicine since you qualified a year ahead of me from the herbal school in Tunbridge Wells. So welcome to the Herbal Medicine Show, Dee.
Thank you very much. I mean, the National Institute of Medical Herbalists has been the foundation throughout my whole career, which, let's face it, 30 years of herbal medicine, it's a long time. And I think when I first qualified 30 years ago, I didn't really understand the journey that I was going to go on or where it was going to take me. And I was just totally blessed. I was so lucky because I was offered the opportunity to work in the UK's oldest herbal house, Napier's, in Scotland, in Edinburgh. I was born in Scotland, so for me, it was like a dream.
Coming home.
And it was the most amazing building. And it was like a treasure trove of herbal medicine. It had been in the same family since 1860.
Wow.
The last family member had died in the 1970s. And every inch of that building breathes herbal medicine. There were wooden chests that when I opened them, they had odd things like glass ear syringes, pewter enema kits. There was even a box of champagne corks. There was glass jars with formaldehyde full of tapeworms. And there were recipes.
Wow. Old recipes for
tinctures
and powders.
Yes, and composition essence and blood purifying tonic and things to remove tapeworm, and things if you had too much to drink. And there was there were creams and ointment recipes. It was a dream, and they're all written in copperplate handwriting and all in old measurements.
Wow. So in drachms and...
Yes, exactly. and even more exciting, there was somebody working there who had been employed since she was 14, and at that time she was in her mid to late 40s.
Wow.
So she had been employed by one of the Napiers, and she had learned, she was not a herbalist, but she had learned from them how to make these recipes. And they weren't simple. They were, physiomedicalism. They were 30 different herbs, and the herbs were put into great big stone jars and covered with water. And then they were left to macerate. And then at a certain point, they were taken out and a big cork was taken off and they were laid on brown paper and they were allowed to oxidize overnight. And then they were put back in, and all these processes.
Wow.
It was like stepping into the witch's cauldron. It was like I was in the middle of Macbeth and I didn't know what to do.
So how did you end up there? How did you end up in Macbeth?
I was just lucky. There was a very well-known naturopathic doctor in Scotland. He was a herbalist and he was called Jan de Vries.
Oh, yes, of course.
He owned the building and he owned many things and he was looking for a young herbalist to work there. And through a series of connections, I came across him. He asked me to go and speak to him. So I went with my mum and dad and we met him and he said, this is a clinic and you could rent it, etc. So I ended up renting one room. And for 2 years, I practiced as a herbalist in one room. I had all my herbs and tinctures on shelves.
So you weren't part of the...
I wasn't part of
it. ...of the pharmacy?
No. And as I sat there, I watched what was happening for 2 years. I watched the pharmacy being run. There was no herbalist running it. It was run as a health food shop. And they were not... They were making the remedies, but they didn't understand what they were doing. And then I saw an opportunity and I offered to take the lease off the company who was running it because they almost had an accident with what they were doing with herbal medicine. And they were so relieved to unload this, what was then a burden on them. So I just took it over. I had no idea how to run a shop. I'd never used a till in my life.
You were quite young. You must have been in your 20s.
I was in my late 20s. Yeah. And I thought, well, I need to borrow some money. Now, how do I do that? Right. So I went to Marks and Spencer's and I bought a suit. I bought a suit from Marks and Spencer's and I went to see my bank manager and I persuaded the bank manager to give me an overdraft for £1,500. And then I took the suit back to Marks and Spencer's and got my money back on it. And then it was just it was like a journey from there. Because I had this vision. I mean, how can you have those kind of visions at that age? But I was so young, I had no fear. And my vision was that I wanted to take herbal medicine onto the high street. I wanted to make herbal medicine a viable profession. I wanted to make it a viable health choice for people. And I thought the only way to do that is to take herbal medicine onto the high street. We've got to go back to our roots. Our roots are in these old apothecaries. That's where we were born from. Why are we trying to leave them behind? Let's go into them. Let's discover them. Let's rediscover them. And let's make them work for this generation that's coming behind us.
How amazing. And you certainly did that because that building is from 1800 and something, isn't it?
It's been the same building. It's actually the city, part of the Edinburgh city wall. It was the city bedlam. So it's a very marvellous place to practice. It's a huge heritage. It feels like a huge responsibility. Mm. But I've loved every minute of the 30 years of what I've been doing. And it's interesting to look at the old formulas and the old recipes. And it started me on a journey of wanting to find old herbal pharmacies and old herbal businesses and try and recover the recipes because it's something that has been lost or is in danger of being lost. Yeah. And we took over those old pharmacies and took over the recipes and the formulas so that we could act as custodians and use them in practice because some of them are so valued today.
Yeah. So give me an example of a recipe, an old recipe that you revived and used.
Well, the recipe that I use all the time, I would say it's my go-to recipe. Mr. Napier called it his nerve debility tonic. He used it for the stresses and strains of modern living. And I've actually seen the adverts that he used to put out for the stresses and strains of modern living.
Right, in 18-something.
Exactly. When everything gets too much for you, when you just want to sit down and cry, this is the remedy for you. So it's really a remedy for stress and anxiety. And I've renamed it for various legal reasons throughout 30 years with changes in legislation. I call it Skullcap, Oat and Passion Flower. Mm. It has about 35 different herbs in it. We're dealing with anxiety and stress. So the obvious thing would be to put something in to manage anxiety, hence the skullcap. The name skullcap tells us, you know, historically that it's been used for the skull, used for anxiety. But the old herbalists believed that if you are anxious, there's no point in just treating anxiety. There's no point in just giving you something to deal with the anxiety in the head, because anxiety actually affects every fiber of your body. So your muscles are taut, your tummy isn't working properly, you find that you have palpitations, you're breathing more quickly. So they used very small amounts of herbs to tone every one of the body systems. So they would take this completely holistic view of treating something like anxiety. And it absolutely, I mean, it makes sense. When I say it like that, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And this, I've called it, this is my own phrase, but I call it the tonic prescribing principle, where you look at your presenting ailment, anxiety, and you work down and you tone all the different areas that might be affected so that the body as a whole is being looked after. And when you work with herbs and look at the synergy within these old recipes is amazing. They use a synergy of three. So they believe that you blended herbs in threes. The remedies, the prescribing within the remedies are based on this, the power of the three. And I can see that throughout the old herbal formulas.
It sounds absolutely amazing, but what a lot of work it must have been as well
to
revive that.
But when you're in the middle of it, you don't think of it as work. My father helped, and he was, you know, he was a great researcher, and he was fascinated by old recipes. He wrote books and he researched, so he was able to research and to help me untangle the recipes. I mean, I didn't really know what, you know, the measurements were and the drachmas and how to translate it, but he did. So we worked together and we rewrote the recipes, and there were obviously the lady who had previously worked there, she was able to help getting the formulas to write. But some of the things are so fascinating. They made a lobelia cough syrup.
Wow.
And the lobelia cough syrup was put into great big jars with a cork on top. They put brown paper and they put the cork on top, and it was left to sit. And then after a number of weeks, they would open it and there was a thick mold on top. And when I saw this, when I took this over, I went, oh my God, throw it all out. We cannot use it. And we made the recipe again and the same thing happened. And I went, okay, what's happening? Are we not sterilizing properly? And the lady who worked there said, no, no, that always happens. And I suddenly thought,
it's supposed penicillin, to happen.
It's penicillin.
Oh my God.
That's why that cough syrup works so well.
Yay. Wow.
It was a penicillin mold.
Yeah, of course.
And it was...
What a dream. I mean...
I know, we can't do that now, but...
But
I did make it for a number of years, and it worked so well.
And you have done it very successfully, because I see your tinctures all over the place. What an amazing contribution you've made to herbal medicine, and for that and many other things, you've been made a fellow.
It was such an honor to receive that today. And, you know, even although, you know, I know Nim so well, it's just touched me. And it was so beautiful because, you know, when I look at, you know, the body of the Kirk, when I look at Nim and I look at all the people who make up that membership, so many of them have been through my doors, so many of them have been students, have come by, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for giving us your time now and for sharing your wonderful story with us.
Thank you.
I came out of the city, I left it far behind. Needed rest for my body, I needed peace for my mind. Heard the sound of the waters, so rapid, so pure. And I dipped in my toes, and I took the cure. It was a meeting of friends, with good food all around. Music and laughter, the only sounds. Felt the warmth of the fire, flames dancing in the night. I was taking the cure, and my heart felt so light. I went out for a stroll in the fresh morning air. Oh, the birds were there too, but they didn't take the steps. They soared with the clouds and they rode on the wind. I was taking the cure and I started to sing. all the produce of the field, from the roots to the fruits, the earth's perfect yield. Artichokes, tomatoes, cherries, strawberries and pears, I was taking the cure, getting younger in years. Kidneys and spleen, gallbladder and pancreas, they were in a kind of dream. Skin, stomach, intestines, they were cleansed and renewed. I was taking the cure in friendship and food. What was inside came out, what was outside flowed in. I swapped my weary frown for a smile and a grin. In the mountains and valleys, in the woods and the trees, I was taking the cure to set my spirit free. Sulfur shampoo, had a time inhalation and a time in yarrow brew. Oh, the sun was going down, the dinner went down too. We were taking the cure, just me and you. It far behind, needed rest for my body, I needed peace for my mind. Heard the sound of the waters, so rapid, so pure, put my head right under till I'd taken the cure. Put my head right under till I'd taken the cure.
Wasn't it fascinating to hear Dee talk about the old herbal traditions, the traditions we have inherited from previous generations, practices that have been going on for hundreds or thousands of years, of ways of using herbs to keep us happy and healthy and able to cope with everyday life. Passiflora, or passion flower as she talked about, is Passiflora incarnata, and that's one of my favorite herbs too. You may have one of Passiflora incarnata's close relatives in your garden, namely Passiflora caerulea. And you can use that in the same way as we use Passiflora incarnata. It's also called maypop or wild apricot because the fruits that are very recognizable at this time of year are like small yellow apricots that hangs from this beautiful vine that can grow along fences or up walls. It likes south-facing walls and it likes a lot of sun and heat, like passion. And it's a very beautiful flower. It's blue and very circle round. I always think it's like a chakra flower. Or we use them in herbal medicine as a general relaxant. It's the leaves and the root we use, mainly the leaves. We normally pick them while the plant is in flower, but you can also pick them now while the fruit is out before the leaves start turning yellow. And you can make a tea of the leaves and use them as a general relaxant or if you can't sleep at night. They're very useful as for restlessness or excitability, or if a child can't sleep, you can give them a cup of Passiflora tea, perhaps with a little bit of chamomile to make it sweeter at bedtime or in the evening after supper. And it gives a very nice feeling of relaxation. At the conference, I also tracked down the president of the National Institute of Medical Herbalists, the old organization that Dee has just become a fellow of. Here she comes, Laura Stannard. You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show. So I've found a quiet corner in the bar of the Queen Hotel in Chester, where the National Institute of Medical Herbalists conference is being held. And I've tracked down the president, both the previous, the current and future president in one person, which is Laura Stannard. And because there's quite a lot of noise and music, we're having a real head-to-head here. So, welcome to the Herbal Medicine Show, Laura.
Thank you, Kirsten. Thank you for having me. And it isn't me singing in the background.
No, we're not quite sure who it is. But, Laura, I wanted to wondered whether you could tell our listeners about what is the National Institute of Medical Herbalists, because I think this is annual conference number 154, is that correct?
That is correct. The National Institute of Medical Herbalists, NIMH, or NIM as some people call it, is a professional association of medical herbalists that was established in 1864. We are obviously the oldest and the largest body of practitioners of herbal medicine in the world.
In the world, even?
In the world.
Wow. But so how many members?
Don't get overexcited. There's 600 of us.
Wow.
But we do have members across the world. We have members in every continent, I think. But most of our members are in the UK.
What does a medical herbalist do?
To qualify, you have to meet the entry standards, which are quite high, as they should be in healthcare. So we practice herbal medicine, which is... It's a holistic healthcare. There may appear to be quite a lot of similarities between us and the medical profession with doctors. But we spend a lot more time with our patients, and we treat them with medicinal plants, herbs, and we also give nutritional advice and advice on lifestyle, exercise, all that sort of thing. So we give a whole treatment package, and we not only prescribe medicines, we have access to many medicines that you would not find in the high street or over the counter or on the internet. We have dedicated suppliers, and we make up medicines specifically for each patient according to their own individual needs. These are tailor-made. We use the whole herb. That doesn't mean to say if we're using oak, we've chopped down an entire tree and
because I specified, we're not oak bark or something.
Yes, when we say whole herb, we're talking about not taking out individual constituents.
So not isolating chemical compounds.
But we might, depending on the plant that's used, it could be leaves, bark, roots, berries, flowers. Yeah. It has been around since there were people who got ill. And actually, it's used by the animal world as well. You find animals will go and self-medicate. They know instinctively what to use. There are some people who say we are the second oldest profession in the world, because when the oldest profession in the world got ill, they had to have somebody to turn to. Medicine also has to be humorous.
Yeah, exactly. I think humor is the best.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yes, I think it's a good time when patients leave my clinic with a smile on their faces.
Yeah, that's halfway to healing.
Yes,
healing.
It is.
Feeling cheerful. So it's tinctures, but I suppose that's what the monks also used. Isn't that how they, from monasteries?
All of those, the monks used to make medicinal wines, beverages, which you can now buy as, for instance, Benedictine monks would have made that, but they have botanicals in them that give the flavour, but they do have a medicinal
something
aspect
like vermouth
to it.
Or
yes.
Martini or
yes,
like that.
Which are made from vervain.
Yeah,
the tinctures are just one way of giving medicine. It's quite a concentrated dose, so you need less of it. And it's quite convenient, especially for people in the modern world. We can also give people teas, which are
herb teas,
but they will be medicinal. And there are things like syrups, and but we might have things that you can apply to the skin,
mm-hmm.
topical applications, creams, ointments.
So herbalists learn to make all those things themselves.
Yes, we learn our own pharmacy. We can actually be a self-contained medical discipline, all to ourselves. So we start with a diagnosis, take full case history, go through exactly what is wrong with the patient, and then come up with a treatment plan. But we can also make all of the medicines that they need.
Wow, and dispense them.
Yes.
So most herbalists have their own dispensary on site, haven't they?
They do, yeah.
And so why would they want to be a member of NIM, apart from that it's very cool to be a member of the oldest and largest organisation?
Well, being president of NIM, I would actually say we're also the best. I have to. We have high entry standards, and we are recognised. We are recognised amongst our colleagues as well, particularly in other parts of the world. I'm not poking fun at people. We have very good relationships with our colleagues in other organisations. Amongst the herbal profession, we are recognised, and some of that is the length of tradition that we have. We're also recognised by our colleagues in other complementary medicine fields. And again, it's because we have such a long tradition.
So if you say you're a NIM medical herbalist, people will know that then you are fulfilling certain standards and they can expect...
Yes, there are entry standards. We expect our members to have been trained to at least degree level. We have an independent accreditation board that monitors the standards and accredits the courses applying to us and make sure they're up to the standard so that the graduates from those courses are eligible to apply.
Mm.
We have a code of ethics. We have complaints and disciplinary procedures. We have compulsory continuing professional development. We run our annual conference. We have CPD seminars throughout the year. We are a voluntary regulator because that's as a professional association, we are regulating our members.
So if anyone does, if there's complaints about someone, or so you
we will
take
deal.
It, yeah.
Yes, we have.
And if there's, and you will presumably also help a herbalist if there's.
Oh, yes.
So it goes both ways?
It goes both ways, but we have to show that we are fair to both sides.
Yeah.
Actually, we have very few complaints, and they're usually quite simple and resolved easily.
So if someone wants to find a medical herbalist on your register, how would they go about that?
Oh, they can look on the internet. We have a website.
Like you can for everything else.
www.nimh.org.uk. Find a herbalist.
And you have an office as well, haven't you?
We have an office. We have an office in Exeter. And there's somebody in the office every day. We have a council. Well, our council are volunteers.
Okay.
Dedicated people who give up their lives for the profession.
Because it must be quite a bit of work. And as president, because now you're in your sixth year as a president.
Yes.
Must have a very tolerant family.
I do. I have a very tolerant and supportive family. I've been involved in helping run the NIMH for quite a long time.
Well, I better
thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
in this picture I'm trying to build at the herbal conference, I've talked to Dee, the practicing herbalist and medicine maker, and to Laura, another practicing herbalist and president of the National Institute of Medical Herbalists. I thought it would be interesting to meet an educator to see what's it actually like to do the training to become a medical herbalist.
So here's Anita Ralph, who is running a new herbal education, an online herbal education called Heartwood.
Hello, Kirsten.
Hi, nice Anita. So please tell me, what is Heartwood about?
Heartwood is just this incredible project, this fantastic project of putting herbal medicine training into an online platform. And initially, I was rather nervous about this idea, I have to admit, that I thought that really good training would be required to be delivered in a one-to-one, face-to-face capacity. But actually, this is what marvellous technology has come on. So it's just incredible how technology allows us now to provide course content in a multiple array of forms. So students can log on, see some information, they can read that, they can watch video clips, they can interact with live webinars, or they can listen to the live webinars that have been recorded for them, and they can stop and start and replay. They can communicate with their tutors and with other students. There is just this incredible bubble of energy behind this, what appears to be a very technological background. It's but once you've put the people in the picture, the whole thing is incredibly human. And so Heartwood is this incredible opportunity for people to train in herbal medicine, to become qualified herbal practitioners, and it's available online. It's amazing.
Wow. So that means there's not a lot of traveling involved, even if you live on a Scottish island or so and you can still tune in.
That's exactly it. And this
and so can the teachers.
Yes. And so not only is it great for those people who perhaps would have found it difficult for any reason actually to travel to turn up to where the lecturer may be giving their presentation, but even more than that, it's about everyone else meeting those people who are in far-flung places so that people can share and, you know, they have so much to share.
But what about clinical training? I mean, you can't do that online, surely. How can you do a clinical examination on the net? I know you can consult the doctor on the net, but they must have to learn some hands-on skills.
Absolutely. And that is really, really important, of course. But there are opportunities, of course, to apprentice alongside other medical herbalists who are already in practice, who have busy running clinics. And so students can go and get a placement set up with a number of different herbalists over
that are local then to where they live,
that could well be local to where they are, or perhaps local to a family member or someone they can go and stay with.
So they are all members of the National Institute of Medical Herbalists then, the tutors or the clinic tutors?
Exactly that. So quite a lot of the National Institute of Medical Herbalist members run very busy practices, but there are also opportunities to get some experience with conventional healthcare providers too. So you can sit in for example, the Whipps Cross Hospital Dermatology Department, who have been collaborating with medical herbalists for many, many years.
Wow, gosh, that's really interesting. So what if I don't want to... You know, I'm too old or too young or too lazy or too busy to become a herbalist. Is there anything for me? There's something about there's another course as well that is a bit easier that I think you have written a lot of, haven't you?
Well, yes, there certainly is. And again, this is this wonderful opportunities of providing this way of learning that Heartwood have set up. What's known as a foundation course. It's a 12-unit course set out over 12 months where any participant can join and learn just the fundamentals of the ideas behind herbal medicine. So students can do that just for personal pleasure and interest. They can access some ideas about maybe even treating themselves for minor ailments, a little bit of first aid for themselves and their family. But it also introduces people to those concepts behind herbal medicine, those things that make herbal medicine totally unique, the ways of thinking about the health of the human body.
Oh, that's nice.
And so, that may even also be a stepping stone into the professional course if people want it to be. So that's the Hartwood Foundation course.
That sounds wonderful as well. And we also, I know that we, because I run the herb garden, I get the students to come and they come in the herb garden. They can come every Friday if they want to, but they also go on in seminars, and then I see them in the herb garden and in the complementary medicine library we have there as well.
That just sounds brilliant, because don't you think actually this, not just face-to-face with patients and people, but of course the plants themselves, the access.
Yes, and to see them, how the plants started, and see them in context and so on, I think is really important as well.
Oh,
and that
lovely.
Can, we use pictures of them as well, plant identification quizzes that we have, that I put up on the website, which is quite fun. And I put the answers in another file so they can go and check. And that's just, I take pictures every week. So, when I walk the dogs, I take pictures of what I pass and then I put them up on, there's 20 plants a week.
That's so good, because, of course, plants are always in a state of emergence, aren't they?
That's the thing,
They have childlike and then adult and then elder. Ways of being. So if it's getting to know what a plant looks like, not just when it's flowering, but when it's in its dormant state, after it's finished flowering.
Yeah, and it's so often that we think, oh gosh, is it just that? Is that really? and they can change so much, as you say. But it's important. So I take pictures of a dandelion in the autumn as well as in the spring and so on, and it's actually quite fun and just to give the students an awareness of how much medicine we're surrounded by, that it doesn't have to come in a bottle or out of a pharmacy or something, but they can actually also connect with where they are.
Oh, that's just perfect, because so much of herbal medicine is local to where we live. The herbs are all around us, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons it can be so difficult to learn herbs, because you think, oh God, they're all for headache or fever. But of course, that's because people didn't used to be as able to travel, and neither did herbs, as we are now. So local people would use local herbs for local problems, and everyone has headache from time to time.
Exactly.
So every society has a herb for headache.
Having said that, have you got a range of different herbs from different continents in the herb garden? Are you developing
we're developing
garden?
That yes we are actually we're developing a herb bed that is that takes in all the different disciplines of using herbs, both Eastern and Western and Ayurvedic and so on, in a circular sort of year garden that has yin and yang and the rising and of energies and the going down into the roots in the autumn and so on. And then we're going to put the plants in where they belong according to their star signs and elements and anthroposophic. And we're trying to see, someone called Alex, who's an anthroposophist who lives at Emerson, and I, who are working together on it. And what's so amazing is that we didn't think the different systems would work together, but with a little bit of tweaking, they fit in, and of course they do, because if something is true, it's true, isn't it?
Exactly right. Yes, I always thought that, that perhaps we'd lost so much knowledge, particularly here in the West, where our herbal medicine traditions have been a bit fragmented and broken with the loss of herbs from our British pharmacopoeias. But actually, I've gradually come to realise, as I've become more experienced as a practitioner, if it's true that a plant is helpful, it is true, and therefore it's rediscoverable.
Yay, isn't that brilliant?
Mm.
And on that happy note, I'll let you go and have your lunch. Thank you very much, Anita.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show.
So I'm in the garden, and the sun is shining, and I can see a bird flying across the valley. It's absolutely beautiful weather, and the colours are changing. The ginkgo is just about starting to become yellow. And I've got a very special guest in the garden today, which is my friend Paul Hamley. And he's a very special guest because he is chairman of the National Institute of Medical Herbalist Education Fund, which is the fund behind this whole venture of the herb garden and the library and the Heartwood courses and everything. And the Education Fund is a charity, and I've asked Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Kirsten. Absolutely delighted to be here.
Excellent. And I will let you speak as well eventually.
Thank you very much. You're doing very well.
So I wonder if you'll tell us more about the Education Fund.
Yeah, delighted to. It was set up back in the early 1970s by eminent herbalists of that time. And the idea was to try to set up a school. And they did lots of fundraising, and after a few years, they managed to set up the School of Herbal Medicine in Tunbridge Wells,
where we went. I didn't even realise that was then.
It was, they did fantastic work, all sorts of different projects to raise the money, and they kept the school going for many, many years and set up the training clinics for us and then for other ones around the country. And then all the universities set up, didn't they, and did the herbal training. And
so you could get a degree in herbal medicine, which, of course, we couldn't. We had a diploma.
That's right, It was exactly the same training, wasn't it? But it was just, you got a different piece of paper. Anyway, the Education Fund kind of lost its way for many years because it wasn't serving any great purpose. So it was doing good work still in looking after smaller projects. And then about 10 years ago, I was asked with a couple other colleagues to come onto the board, and I quickly became put into the chair. And
your rightful place, obviously.
My rightful place, of course. And we gradually got our feet under the table and felt secure about what we were doing. Running a charity isn't always straightforward.
No, I can imagine.
It was as soon as we took over, we were gifted in a bequest. A house which was absolutely fantastic.
So you had? Do you still have the house, or did you?
We sold it, and it was. I never met her, the person, Elizabeth Cracknell.
Uh-huh. And was she a herbalist or?
No, I think she'd been a patient, some connection with an old herbalist called Janet Hicks. Do you remember Janet?
Yeah, of course, I remember her. She was president, or vice president.
She was the secretary of the National Institute. Elizabeth Cracknell. She left us this money, and that is what has given us the ability to set all this up.
Oh.
Bless her cotton socks.
Yeah.
And so we've managed to set up the Heartwood Education Project, and I hope we'll make a lot more progress here with the garden and the library and the botanic garden.
Yes. Yeah, because we're here.
So exciting.
Yeah, it is.
I just love coming here. It's such a great feel. Here we are sat with this beautiful view as well.
Yeah. The light over the Ashdown Forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Paul, that's the story so far.
Mm.
So we have plans as well, don't we, Paul?
Do we, Kirsten? Tell me what our plans are.
Well, we're working on making the Emerson Gardens into a botanic garden.
We are, yeah.
And we're working on a labelling system which I've sourced some labels, you'd be pleased to know, which apparently are the same as the Queen uses in her gardens.
Nothing but best for us.
Oh, look, there's a little Robin come to join the interview. Hello, Robin.
Oh, yes.
There's a willow right in front of us, and now there's a Robin. Oh, and he's now coming even closer, sitting in the vine. Hello, Robin.
Give an interview.
Eating the grapes. Yeah. Emerson also has a vegetable garden. And Trude, who runs the vegetable garden, is very keen. And she's another Scandinavian, a Norwegian. She'd really like a greenhouse up there for various to grow various things and to extend the season. And you and I, Paul, have been talking about propagation of, especially you're keen on that idea.
There's this, a few herbs that we herbists are using that are becoming rare and even endangered. And it's such a shame not to be able to use them. And if we can start to propagate and cultivate them and get them out into the world of the commercial world, so they can be grown in much bigger quantities, we'd be doing a huge favour for herbalists and obviously then for our patients. Because I really miss not using some of these herbs. And because they're endangered, we just don't use them at the moment.
Yeah, like golden seal, are you thinking?
Yeah, a trillium as well.
Trillium? It's trillium.
Yeah, and camelarium. Okay, you can get...
And the lady's slipper.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I haven't used that for 25 years now.
Yeah.
Really useful plants. So if we can get that going... That'd be so exciting. As we all know, we need to get onto the conservation side and build up our ecologies inside ourselves and around us. And so the more we can contribute to the positive, the better.
Because the latest thinking in biology is that we're actually not individuals, we're ecosystems ourselves. So I think that really mirrors what's happening with the planet, isn't it?
Doesn't it just?
That it's what's within us is also without.
Yeah, we've been made deficient within ourselves because of our lack of ecology, aren't we?
Yeah.
And so it's happening on the outside.
Yeah.
We are so dependent on each other as humans and with our plants and our colleague species, animals.
I think another thing that I've always known, obviously, but I'm coming more conscious of is that, of course, plants are just as alive as we are. Mm. Just because they don't move, allegedly.
Don't often spot them moving.
But they do, don't they? It's just they move a bit slower.
Yeah, yeah.
And I often think of... like something like that big oak tree we can see down there. It must be 300 years of...
Yeah, they've got more time, haven't they? They've got more time than us. Yeah.
Yeah, and what has it seen?
I know.
I mean, they make it possible for us to live on this earth, not just as medicine, but also as nourishment, because we can't eat soil or drink sunlight. But by eating plants, we get access to both.
Yeah, they convert it for us, don't they? And we all know, there's no argument about eating plants, eating vegetables. That is healthy, isn't it? Everyone agrees. And if you don't eat your veg, as Mummy and Granny has always said, you don't eat your veg, you're going to get poorly.
And when you're poorly, you need chamomile.
You do.
I grow them chamomile. So at this time of year, Paul, what's your favourite plant to use?
Well, as walking up here earlier, came past Viburnum opulus, cramp bark.
Yeah.
The berries are looking so beautiful at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
And, it's the bark we use. But
what do you use the bark for?
For blood pressure, for reducing cramps, whether it's
so that's why it has the name
cramp bark.
Cramp bark, it releases cramps.
Yeah, but it relaxes the muscles in your arteries, so it helps to drop your blood pressure a bit. You can combine it with other plants, obviously, but it's lovely. It's so beautiful this time of year.
That's a nice one. Mm. And what about, so that was for medicine, what about overall, or was that for both?
Gosh, overall, pumpkins. I've had a wonderful cup of pumpkins this year. Oh, I made a nice soup the other day. Oh,
so what's your secret recipe?
Well, a bit of onion. Yeah, put in some pumpkin, and at the same time, I've got heaps of tomatoes at the moment. So yeah, blitz up the tomatoes in the juicer, put them in another pan, get them to simmer right down, and add that in. And what else? Obviously, a bit of salt and pepper. I can't think I put in anything else actually.
Coconut milk?
No, didn't actually. And my wife Frances complimented me by saying, "It tastes just like it came out of a tin." It was like Heinz. I couldn't believe it.
Was that supposed to be a compliment?
She said, "This is a compliment."
That doesn't speak well for the rest of your cooking. I had you downstairs a pretty good cook, actually. Maybe I need to revise my...
Yeah. So yeah, I took it as a compliment.
That sounds like a very nice soup. Homegrown soup. Mm. Delicious.
Yeah. Soup time of year, isn't it?
It is. Soups and stews. Well, thank you very much.
We
have to go and move a whole load of boxes because we're moving office as well, aren't we, Paul?
Yes, thank you, Kirsten. So
we finished our tea out of the flowery teapot.
It's all been very pleasant.
So we better go and do something practical now. Thank you very much, Paul.
It's been great. Nice to see you.
We've come to the end of this week's Herbal Medicine Show. Thank you to Dee Atkinson, Laura Stannard, Anita Ralph and Paul Hambley for telling us the ins and outs of the herbal profession, to Peter Firebrace and Nick Rowley for the music, and to the Heartwood production team for putting it all together and making it possible. Thank you for listening, and please join me again next week for another dose of plant power.